Well, an astonishing number of plays are about sex and desire, about falling in love, about having affairs, about the comedies and the tragedies of human passion. And in any play, actors make themselves vulnerable and available to the audience and to each other. Well, now the testimony in Geoffrey Rush's defamation case against the Daily Telegraph has raised questions for the industry at large about where acting ends and sexual harassment begins. And however that case is decided, it's provoked a good deal of soul-searching in the theatre companies themselves. Black Swan Theatre Company is West Australia's major theatre company, and the artistic director is Claire Watson. Hi, Claire. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thanks.
And Zoe Angus is the National Director of Actors Equity, which is part of the MEAA. That's the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance, the big union that represents people in media and in entertainment. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
So your union commissioned a survey last year, Zoe, to discover the extent of sexual harassment and some other issues too in the live performance industry. What did you find? How many people in the industry said that they had actually experienced sexual harassment?
We did commission a national survey of our members. The results were pretty startling. The data shows us that somewhere between 40 and 60% of performers have experienced sexual harassment, and commonly on multiple accounts. And the reason why there's a spread is it depends on what type of harassment you're talking about. The same number of people indicated, the same levels indicated, that they had also directly witnessed another person experiencing sexual harassment in the workplace.
And is that both men and women reporting sexual harassment?
It is both men and women. Yeah. There are higher instances of females reporting sexual harassment, but it is an issue not confined to women alone.
Yeah. The figures for men are substantial. I mean, I've been looking at the way in which the industry measures up against any other workplace, because there's also been a recent report from the Human Rights Commission, and it looks to me as though theatre is on a level par with most other workplaces when it comes to incidences of sexual harassment.
Well, I think that's right in one respect. Sexual harassment is not an issue unique to our industry. It's a broader labour market-wide problem. But there are particular vulnerabilities, I think, in theatre and on screen as well, because of the nature of rehearsing intimacy scenes. There's a whole raft of reasons why I think there are certain vulnerabilities in our sector that we need to be particularly live to and take account of in how we move forward to address it.
Yeah, well, As I say, actors are making themselves vulnerable and available in a way that you just don't in any other workplace.
That's right, yeah.
Claire, does all this equate with your experience?
Yeah. Look, I think the figure of 40 to 60% is in some ways shockingly high, but in some ways it's something that we understood about our industry as well.
I mean, sexual harassment is a broad term.
Yeah.
From unwanted attention right through to, well, forms of assault, I suppose, things that are bordering on assault. I mean, it's a very broad spectrum we're taking in
here. The data we have around assault and what you'd actually call criminal misconduct is between 15 to 20%. It's lower. And there we're talking about assault, sexual assault, stalking. But they are dangerously high levels to begin with.
Yeah, that's an astonishing figure, isn't it? The union, the MEAA and others arranged an event called the Safe Theatres Forum, which took place in Melbourne earlier this year. Claire, you were there. What was it all about?
Yeah, I felt very lucky to be part of that conversation. It was a terrific few days. It was a gathering of people from all across our industry, so from around the country, from the independent sector, from major performing arts organisations. It included actors and artistic directors and executive directors. And it was a conversation about what are we seeing currently in our industry and what can we all be doing to do better.
And this is in relation to sexual harassment, bullying and discrimination in particular, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting because I think that fundamentally the issue is around power and around the hierarchical structures that exist within the industry. So there was something truly wonderful about our first, we had a beautiful welcome to country, and then we had a presentation from some children who were talking to us about their experience of bullying. So suddenly making the experts in the room, people who are, you know, at primary school, felt a lovely way of demonstrating to us that we can really interrupt and shift the hierarchy, even in a conversation like that.
When you say it's about the hierarchy of the industry, aren't sexual harassment and bullying also quite able to happen between people who are in the same position? I mean, workers bully each other.
Absolutely, but I think in our industry, so you might have two actors in one rehearsal room, but they might have different status as characters. They might have a different perceived status in the industry. One might have already worked with a director a number of times and formed a closer working relationship in a shorthand, and that might feel alienating to an actor who comes into that process. So it's very complicated, it's very complex, but I think that fundamentally what we need to address is how the power structures exist and what we can do about them.
Why are we suggesting that power structures are undesirable? I mean, in a theatre company, there's going to be an artistic director, there's going to be directors of plays, there's going to be stars, there's going to be extras. Isn't that unavoidable?
I don't think top-down power structures are unavoidable. I think it's quite possible to have systems in place where people absolutely know what the job is that they're doing and where their expertise lies, but it can be done in a really collaborative way, and it can be done in a way where everybody feels consulted. So, you know, that idea of a wolf pack runs as fast as its slowest runner, I think that in some ways if we look to those sorts of leadership models, we can start to create spaces that feel like everybody is included and everybody is respected and everybody's heard. And those, to me, those would be the safest working environments, because it means that if people are feeling intimidated, if they're feeling humiliated, they're able to speak up and know that things can change for them.
So, Claire, there's an outfit now called the Confederation of Australian State Theatres, or CAST, and it looks from this list as though the major companies are pretty much all here. Bill's here, Belvoir, Black Swan, you guys, Circus Oz, Malthouse, MTC, on the list goes. In December last year, CAST announced that all its members would adopt a national code of behaviour. How does that work?
Look, it was something that the companies have been talking about and working on for quite some time. And the way it has worked is we've consulted broadly with the industry, and including MEAA and Zoe, to have a statement, and it sits on all of our websites. People are welcome to go and take a look at those. And we also share, we read it out at the start of every rehearsal process. And I think what it does is it reminds everybody that we are not going to tolerate sexual harassment. There's zero tolerance of bullying. And it reminds us that everybody is responsible. So if you experience something, or if you indeed witness something, it's everybody's responsibility to report or to try and improve the situation.
Claire, the theatre is an environment where intimacy and affection and a certain emotional freedom, I suppose, are part of the culture. I mean, you know, and I know, leading men and leading women who've fallen in love for the or had an affair for the duration of a season, and then it's all ended. We've all seen that. Is that side of theatre no longer acceptable?
Look, I think about reminding ourselves that theatre is a workplace. And in the same way that I've worked in high schools where teachers might fall in love with each other, I think that people's personal lives are quite separate to their workplace relationships. And while in theatre, yes, sometimes people have to create scenes of intimacy, I think there are ways of doing that that maintain the professionalism of the room, and that's something that we're all trying to achieve. So one of the suggestions and people are starting to implement is this idea of an intimacy officer. So we have fight directors, kind of like fight choreographers, if we're doing fight sequences, to make sure that people stay physically safe. And we have vocal coaches to make sure that people, like, their dialect is spot on, but also they're not hurting their voices. And I think that having this idea of an intimacy officer, somebody whose job it is to make sure that the conversation has happened around how people feel most comfortable going into a scene, I think that's a great step forward for us as an industry. I don't think that means that the play is any less fun. I don't think that means that the experience of watching the play is any less kind of exhilarating or electric. I just think that it shifts the process a bit.
Can I say, Michael, look, one of the ways that we are contributing to this whole discussion is that we have brought out She lands tomorrow, a world-renowned intimacy coordinator, and we've set up a national tour for her. She's going around to every capital city in Australia, and we'll be putting on workshops for the industry, not just live performance, but also screen sector as well, and talking about that issue of... and we're not talking about just sex performance here or violence. We're talking about scenes of dealing with scenes of anger, fraternal intimacy. And the essential point is that these sort of scenes, particularly when you're talking about rehearsing them for many, many weeks at a time and then a performance run which can go on for months, these scenes need to be coordinated and choreographed in that same way as Claire's saying, is that you would for a stunt performer, you would for a fight scene on stage, so that the performers involved navigate some what are often, you know, complex issues around consent, and the whole process is undertaken in a professional and respectful manner. And this is a debate that we need to have in Australia. We don't have a history of choreographing and coordinating intimacy scenes. This is a new notion. And it's a very important debate that I think will now be picked up, arising from the Safe Theatres Forum that we held.
I'm not sure that we're at a spot where we're debating. I feel like the conversation, certainly what I was hearing from that forum, which was so wonderful, is that across the industry, everyone's on board to make sure that our statistics, when we test again in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years, never, ever look as high as they did when they were first tested.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing is that you asked me, Michael, about what the union survey found.
Yes.
It found, on the one hand, clearly that there's a problem in our industry. It also, there was another clear message that comes out of that data, and that is that at the time, theatres in Australia did not have the mechanisms in place to properly deal with issues as they arose. They just didn't know how to respond when people reported. And 40% of people, the data tells us, were in fact reporting instances of sexual harassment when they encountered them. But reporting would in many instances actually worsen the situation. So I think one of the really positive things that came out of the Safe Theatres Forum that we put on was that when we gave this data to all of the theatre companies, and it was a unique, probably world unique experience, that forum. The whole industry comes together, they look at that data and acknowledge that in fact dealing with this issue has been poor up until now, and there was arising from that forum, I think, a genuine commitment to set up consistent policies and procedures, to establish a contact person, a go-to person if anyone has an issue in each workplace, to clearly spell out the rules in a code of conduct, and also to grapple with this issue of how you choreograph intimacy scenes.
So does that mean we're heading towards national standards?
We've got national standards now already in place. About a month ago, a new code of conduct has been released in the industry. And essentially, it's really just a summary of the law. But the code outlines the law in a very clear way that is appropriate and understandable and accessible in our industry, in both live performance and screen. It summarises the law and it sets up standard complaints and investigations procedures so that everyone knows what to expect. And what, and there are certain principles, fairness to all parties, privacy, confidentiality, speed. There are certain agreed ways of dealing with issues as they arise, but also an expectation now that we have an entertainment code of conduct in place that the preventative mechanisms will occur. So, now it's about producers providing proper inductions, providing a welcome kit with all of this information available, but also while explaining it, making sure that everyone knows who to talk to if an issue arises, and having fair and efficient structures in place to investigate and deal with complaints.
So, Claire, how would someone at the Black Swan State Theatre Company who had a complaint, who felt they had been sexually harassed, what would they do? If I was in a cast and I felt I'd been sexually harassed, who would I talk to?
Well, we thought that it was really important. Part of the harmonisation of this is that in each case we need to make sure there's multiple options of people to talk to. So obviously you've got an amazing stage manager who's in the room, but we have also got an equity rep in every cast, and then we have a company manager, a production manager, and we have the executive director and artistic director myself. So we actually all come into our first rehearsal. We make sure that everybody's met everybody. We each come in and visit the rehearsal throughout the process, so make sure that we're accessible and people know that they can come and talk to us informally or formally. And I think that the wonderful thing about harmonising the policies and procedures across the country is that it means that the actors who come to work with us are fully cognizant of their rights and their responsibilities, and this is something that's going to filter to all levels of the industry.
And that's particularly important in this industry because it's such a freelance industry, and you know, people will work on one play and then they might work on a screen production, and they're short-term engagements and they're spread across, you know, different workplaces. So it's important that everyone's clear about what expectations are and what their rights and obligations are across the industry as a whole.
Are you experiencing any resistance to this?
No, it's been so welcomed from the actors that I'm talking to. Sorry, the actors that I've been talking to have been incredibly positive. So I think it's a very positive step.
I agree. It's a very positive step. We're certainly not experiencing resistance. When we have cast meetings and start the discussion about the new code of conduct, everyone is perhaps surprisingly open to and relieved to be having this discussion out in the open. There's a real receptiveness. There's a real acknowledgement that there needs to be cultural change, and there's widespread support for that. I think the issue that we need to grapple with now is how to effectively roll out the code of conduct, because there are, in some instances, it's patchy. There is a sort of, we don't want to slide into a situation where new performers are engaged on a production and they're just handed a bundle of documents. There needs to be the material needs to be talked through rather than just left for performers, cast and crew to digest the material in their own time. So the issue for us now is to ensure that the whole industry knows about the new expectations that we don't slip into a formal exercise rather than a genuine one.
Absolutely. And I know that those conversations are happening at some of the tertiary institutions too. For example, WAPA, I'm well aware, are talking to all of their students, all of their actors and stage management in training about the National Code of Behaviour.
Well, it's good to hear that everybody's talking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the name of the game, really. Zoe and Claire, thank you so much. It's been such a clarifying conversation. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
Zoe Angus is the National Director of Actors Equity, which is part of the Big Media and Entertainment Union, the MEAA. And Claire Watson is the Artistic Director of Black Swan Theatre Company in Perth, which is a member of the Confederation of Australian State Theatres, or CAST. And the other members are the Sydney Theatre Company, Bell Shakespeare, Belvoir, Circus Oz, Malthouse Theatre, Melbourne Theatre Company, the Queensland Theatre and the State Theatre Company of South Australia. And that National Code of Behaviour, which they've all signed up to, includes this statement: as an employee, your responsibility is to ensure your own behaviour is always respectful and to question and report any offensive behaviour directed either to yourself or witnessed. And it defines sexual harassment as any unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature. We invited STC to join this conversation. They didn't take up that offer, but they did provide a statement, which you can read on our website. And that's where you'll also find a link to the CAST, CAST, National Code of Behaviour. I'm Michael Cathcart, and this is The Hub on Stage.